we'll bring in our next guest, who is the
ask him
the baseball writer at Grantland ESPN site. He also appears on Baseball Tonight on ESPN. One of the more famous Montrealers, especially in the baseball world right
Hell
now.
Hell yeah!
And you can follow him on Twitter at Jonah Carey. Jonah, do you remember what happened in the Expos Nation game this year or last?
Last year the Rays won because I have some, you know, casual fandom about the Rays. This year,
same thing, man.
See, he doesn't know.
I don't know. Were they playing the Altoona curve? I can't really remember.
I think it was another 9-0, 9-1. When we were there a couple of years ago, we watched Ricky Romero get lit up. And I can't remember who pitched for the Jays this year, but it was another laugher, another game that was over before it started, but it doesn't matter. And Jay and I were just talking before you came on about there's this little bit of dissension amongst Montrealers as far as this baseball game goes, but the sales don't show that. The sales so far are through the roof.
Well, I mean, there's some bitterness, particularly toward the Jays. And I mean, if we really want to go down that road, there's a couple of things that happen. First of all, Paul Beeston, who comes on and says, "Isn't it wonderful that baseball's coming back to Montreal? Goodness gracious, this is a miracle." First thing he did was he basically took the TV territory away from the Expos other than in Quebec, so he ghettoized the team. Granted, this is a move based on capitalism, and I don't have a problem with capitalism, but those are the facts. The Expos were a vibrant team that had support all over Canada. Then they stopped being on TV, then they didn't have support. That's number one. And number two, when there was a vote for contraction, the Jays voted for contraction. Now, the TV thing happened about 30 years ago, and the contraction thing happened about, was it 11 or 12 years ago now? So, okay, you can go down that road. But if you really, really want to hold a grudge for the rest of your life, I get that. And even if people don't even know about that stuff, some people just don't like Toronto, they don't like the Jays or whatever. Now, having said that, of course I'm with you guys. Here's the thing. Even if you don't think that it's going to put on a show, even if you think that the chances of baseball coming back in Montreal are unlikely, why the hell wouldn't you want to go to a baseball game in Montreal with your friends and drink beers? That sounds amazing to me. That's exactly what I want to do. That's most of the reason why I went to the Expos Nation event. It's nice to show your colors and all that, but I got to see the game with my dad, with my friends. My friends who I've known since I was 5 years old. These are the people that I'm going to sit with at this game, as well as you guys, by the way. And I'm looking forward to it. That's the bottom line. It's a good time at the ball game. So even if you can't find a deep meaning, go and have some San Con, and then go out on the St. Catherine or St. Lawrence afterwards. Who cares? It's fun. Do it.
Not the first person on our radio show to call to openly call them Sankons. I think we had openly. Jay Onright doing the same thing on
right.
the show one
yeah,
time.
Yeah, exactly. And he's right, though. It's like voting for the Republicans because Abraham Lincoln was one. It's a whole new regime. You know what I mean? Why would you do that?
Yeah, but Beeston was there, and he is there now. And I get what Jonah's saying. I like to look at it from the Lenny Leonard school of things. That's why pencils have erasers. They make a mistake. You can fix it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no other way to look at it. There was a certain amount of, I don't know if the right word is pretentiousness, at the press conference when, you know, seeing Paul Beeston in his Blue Jays tie, saying that he's never enjoyed a baseball season more than 81 in Montreal, which coincidentally, half the season wasn't played. And
so
then showing off his World
shirt,
Series ring.
Labor stoppage. Yeah. Right.
Well, those guys are all about the labor stoppages. Jonah, I loved your article this week. You just came out with the 30, as you do every Monday, and only 2 weeks left in the baseball season. And first of all, the Nationals are still in it. You blink and you had no idea.
Yeah, they've been playing much better of late. They've won, what is it, like 9 out of 10, something to that effect. They've been playing much better. Crazy events at D.C. postponed their game tonight, but they're still on the periphery of the race. The Reds did win today, so the Reds are now 5 games up on the Nationals for that second wildcard spot, so it's unlikely. But, I mean, this is kind of the regression toward the mean that we were expecting. I mean, this was just a team that everybody thought would be really, really good. And for, I don't know, most of the season, really the first 5 months, you didn't see it at all. Finally, they're playing better. And I do think they're going to be a good team and a contender again next year. I just think that there are some things that went wrong that you didn't necessarily expect, and they'll pick it up next season. It's a very talented team.
Any word on Strasburg and the rehab tonight?
Yeah, let's see. We can do a live tweet of me going to rotowire.com.
Awesome.
We can find out. Yes, we can find out. This is riveting radio. Just says we'll throw a forearm session, so a bullpen session with his injured forearm. So
okay.
I guess we don't necessarily have an update, but I mean, that's the hope, is that he is able to get through that and that he would pitch probably on Thursday.
It's an interesting story. I mean, the Nationals have been so out of it all year. And is this Davey Johnson's swan song this year as well?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. He's ready to call it quits. And I've got a piece coming out next week about Davey Johnson. Very interesting guy. One of the things about him is he would turn around teams, and then every time he would leave the next season, the team would be like 20 games worse. It happened with the Mets and the Reds. It kept happening over and over. It was very interesting and maybe not entirely a coincidence. But his coaching or managing tree really goes back to the 80s in the minor leagues. He had all these guys. Clint Hurdle managed under him like 30 years ago, or was a coach under him, rather. There's all these people that came through and had that. If you think of the Bill Parcells tree in football, right? You have Belichick and just so many other people. It's a little bit like that with Davey Johnson, too. He just spawned this kind of next generation of managers who've become quite successful, and something I want to explore. Really good manager for many, many years.
Well, I go back to 86.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
I can't think of, I mean, for me, that's, he's the iconic. He was the manager that managed to keep that team together. I can't imagine a crazier clubhouse than the 86
Mets. Looks the same, too, doesn't he? He hasn't really aged that much.
A little older.
It's like Jim Leland. These
guys, say.
Yeah, they look exactly the same as they did 25 years ago. It's weird.
By the way, David Johnson, as a player, has one of the best, I'm pulling this up, has one of the best statistical anomaly seasons ever. So Brady Anderson is, like, cited as a big one. Oh, he hit 50 home runs or whatever.
Sure.
David Johnson's second-best season for home runs was 18. Keep in mind that he played in the late 60s and the early 70s when nobody hit for power, okay? 18 is the second-best. The best was 43. He hit 43 home runs in 1973.
Wow.
I don't know how that's possible. That is just crazy town to me. If that happened, you know, in the 90s, it's pretty obvious what everybody would say about it. I have no idea what happened in 1973. That must have been the cosmic alignment of Jupiter or something. That is insane.
Greenies, man.
I guess. Everybody took greenies, though. That doesn't really explain it. 100% of players were on amphetamines. Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, they all were on PEDs, my friend. So if you have a problem with steroids, then I guess you can't have Willie Mays in the Hall of Fame either.
Well, they're all in the top 10. I mean, it's a greenie list.
Sure.
That's essentially speed, right?
It's speed. That's what it is. Whatever you want. Diet pills, speed, amphetamines, meth, crank. I don't know. I'm too old for slang. I'm almost out of my 30s here. I can't really come up with good stuff.
Well, let's allow you to date yourself a little further. You compared Todd Helton to Sandy Koufax today.
Hey, now. Well, that was a comparison based on knowledge of history and stats. I was not alive when Sandy Koufax
pitched. I know.
Would have been nice. But yes, the point of that was basically that we don't want to get too far down the road with this, but basically there's this whole debate about Helton. And bringing it home a little bit, Larry Walker. Larry Walker, of course, had some great years in Montreal, but specifically was fantastic in Colorado. And people just kind of hand-wave it away. And they say, well, if you played your best years in Coors Field, you automatically can't be in the Hall of Fame. I reject that. You can adjust for anything. Maybe you have to make a big adjustment for Coors Field, not only that, but in that era, or if we're talking about the 90s when everybody hit really well, that's fine, but it can be done. And I don't think it's more extreme to talk about Todd Helton than it is to talk about Sandy Koufax. The 60s were an extreme era for pitchers. The mound was 50 feet high in the sky. Dodger Stadium was probably the toughest place to hit in all of baseball. There were all these 140-pound scrawny middle infielders. Basically, you could take every third inning off. The 7, 8, 9 guys sucked. I mean, it was easy to pitch in the 60s. That doesn't mean that Sandy Koufax wasn't great. That's the point. Just like it doesn't mean that Todd Helton wasn't great. Was Todd Helton as good as Sandy Koufax? No, but the whole idea of we are able to adjust and we should adjust, that's something that I believe in.
You wrote the line, adjusting for park factors is a complicated process, one misunderstood and misinterpreted by the masses and not fully embraced by some baseball analysts. Can you try and explain it to us as best you can? Because, you know, I look at it and I see Walker's MVP season and I think, well, you know, he hit 365 or something like that. And Galarraga's stats were always inflated. Bichette's stats were always inflated. Take a guy like Helton or Walker or something, someone like that. What's your average park? Like, what is the baseline?
Well, let's back up a second. Walker, during those three really super peak seasons in Colorado, I don't have it right in front of me, but I've written about this before, on the road in those years, his OPS was about 950. To give you an idea, that's better than Vladimir Guerrero's career numbers. That's really, 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 really good. So it's not like Walker was entirely a creation of Coors Field. Some of those other guys that you mentioned, Dante Bichette was not a good baseball player. He absolutely benefited from Coors Field, and that was that. Galarraga was probably somewhere in between. He was a pretty good baseball player, but he definitely benefited from Coors Field. What is an average park? Let's see. Let's go and look this up, too. This is, again, riveting, riveting stuff.
Stop but telling everybody, park, Jonah.
Yes. Oh, I know. I'm trying my best. The average park is... Target Field is pretty much an average park,
okay.
I would say. Where the Nationals play is an average park. You know, these are places that they suppress certain elements. It might be that home runs are harder to hit there, but you can hit more doubles and triples and so forth. So that's about average. You know, the ones that are way above average offensively, Coors Field is number one. Texas helps offense big time. The ones that really hurt offense, you're talking about San Diego, the Rays, Tropicana Field definitely plays that way. Dodger Stadium certainly plays that way. San Francisco plays that way. So you have to make those adjustments. So you adjust based on what percentage it is that they inflate stats. Now, it's not so easy. You have to try to separate the player's ability and how the wind was blowing that day and all this stuff
right.
versus these park factors. So it's kind of a good way to do it on the aggregate. But if you start drilling down to how did this guy do in 20 at-bats in Coors Field in 1997, then park factors becomes kind of irrelevant. You need to do it over large samples, preferably 3 years, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line here is you can at least attempt to make some kind of adjustment. It might not be perfect, but you can get a sense for how good a player was.
It's amazing, though, how much somewhere like Colorado gets the bum rap. And nobody talks about how many extra home runs the right field porch gave Babe Ruth or Mickey Mantle.
Sure. Or the guys I'm playing on the Yankees right now, Curtis Granderson hit 40-odd home runs last year, and I don't know how many of them were line drives to right field that went 340 feet, but I would say many. You know, and that is something that I think that people kind of understand. They say, oh, those are cheap home runs or whatever, but they don't really adjust that much. They don't say, well, Curtis Granderson really only hit 35 home runs or whatever. Those home runs occurred. You just have to put them into context, and I think that's how it works. Baseball's a different sport than basketball and football and hockey. Those all have uniform playing surfaces, and you don't need to adjust. But in baseball, it is very much the case that every park is different. That's part of its charm. And if you're going to attempt to do some real analysis, and especially if you're going to attempt to vote on the Hall of Fame, which to me still matters, then you have to try to take that into account.
Speaking of Hall of Fame, isn't it your favorite baseball player's birthday today?
It is. It's Tim Raines' birthday. It's very exciting. I've been wearing my number 3 baby blue 1982 jersey all day long, which is wonderful. And, yeah, he turns 54 today.
Who is number 3 in baby blue? Did you say number 3 or 30?
So I said 30. Did I say 30?
Oh, God, I heard 3. me and Kaufman just looked at each other and we said, is this Jonah Carey?
No, I probably swallowed the word 30. No, 30 for Raines, 3 for Rodney Scott. Listen, I'll give you the numbers of everybody on the roster.
Okay, all right. It is Jonah Carey. Well, David's Jonah. Okay,
considering Jonah has an Expos book out, if you wouldn't mind giving us the phone numbers of everybody, too, that we would appreciate.
Yeah. I do have a lot of phone numbers.
Jonah,
I'll only use them for evil, not for good.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. We've got a couple of minutes left with you, and I just want to ask you, where did you have the A's before the season started?
I had them, I think I had them just missing the playoffs, like winning 87 games or something. I thought they'd be really good, but I thought Texas would win the division, and I think I had the Angels and the A's right around the same record, and the Angels are playing better now. They'll probably finish about 500, but obviously they're not going to make the playoffs. The A's have been great. I just had Susan Slusser, the beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, really a terrific writer. She's on my podcast that'll go up tomorrow on Granlin, and we talked all about it. And I mean, it's not any one thing. They're just good at a lot of things. It's sort of like if you talk about the idea of Moneyball, what is Moneyball? Well, at the time it was on base percentage, but there were also other things that they did well, and now it's they platoon well and they play good defense, and just at its core, they just find good players for cheap. I mean, that's it. That's what they do, you know, and that has made them so successful over the last couple of years. It's really, I mean, I guess the first year was the really big shock, last year in 2012, but they're coming back and they're better this year than they were last season.
They're getting beat up tonight, but by far that is the exception and not the rule, and one of the players really leading the way for them is former Expo Bartolo Colon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been phenomenal. The thing about Colon, there's some obvious things about Colon. First of all, he's 40. Secondly, he was suspended for PED use. Third, he weighs, let's say, a lot of pounds. So those are the obvious things. But what I love about Colon really has nothing to do with any of that stuff. It's the fact that more than 90% of the time, he throws a fastball. In other words, Mariano Rivera throws only one pitch, and he's a relief pitcher. Bartolo Colon does the same thing, but he throws 7 times more pitches than Rivera does over the course of an outing. He's over 100. Rivera throws about 15. and nobody can hit the guy. Everybody in the stadium knows what's coming, but he has so much movement on the fastball and he can locate it wherever he wants that they cannot hit it. I find that absolutely amazing. And if you want to get into the PED stuff or this or that or the other, fine. But I think at its core, it's the idea that he has this exceptional command. He is a really, really good pitcher. And this whole idea of who's going to be the last Expo, you know, he brought up Mathis, Turris, and Bruce Chan has had a little bit of a renaissance and all this stuff. Maybe it's Bartolo Colon pitching at age 45. At this rate, that's actually possible.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, PEDs, greenies, crank, whatever works for him.
Crank.
Right?
That's right. It's all about the crank.
Jonah Carey, thank you so much for your time tonight. We always appreciate it. Can't wait to see you in Montreal for the Mets-Jays series of the Big O. And I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Up and away. Amazon.ca. History of the Expos. It's out March 11th, but pre-order it now and make my kids happy.
I hear you can pre-order it for a very good price off Amazon.ca right now, actually.
It's cheaper on Amazon.ca than Amazon.com, which is probably the first time that's ever happened in the history of Western civilization.
Before we let you go, will you please give us the 28-word title?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Look it up. I think it's on Amazon.ca.
I'm going to have to look it up. It's called Up, Up and Away. The Kid, the Hawk, Rock, Vladdy, Pedro, Le Grand Orange, Yuppie, The Crazy Business of Baseball, and the ill-fated but unforgettable Montreal Expos. That, my friends, is called SEO.
Jonah, I cannot wait to read it. I am so excited for this book to come out. March in Montreal, not just about St. Patrick's Day this year.
Oh, there'll be book signings and book this and book that. And my spies tell me that there might be some other stuff going down in March. So we'll see if that happens
too. Can't wait to share that with our audience. Jonah Carey, follow him on Twitter @JonahCarey. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good night.